You may have had a child who had a speech or hearing issue, or maybe you've had one as a child. I know it. We have our 7-year-old daughter at home, Emily. She had a little hearing issue that affected her speech, and she was able to overcome that. We can talk about that a little bit, but we want to turn our attention to Better Speech and Hearing Month, the concerns for children. Two guests for you today, Dr. Scott McMurray. Is a pediatric otolaryngologist. Also with us today, Maya Braden. Maya is a speech-language pathologist and pediatric voice specialist, and they are both with the American Family Children's Hospital in Madison. So I'm really pleased to have them with us today, and I certainly hope you will join in. If you have some questions or comments for them as we move along today, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page and post a comment at The Larry Mueller Show. We would love to hear from you. And Dr. Scott McMurray, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having us on your show. It's a really important month, Better Speech and Hearing. And I was on your show a few years ago with Nathan Wellum, and we had a lot of great questions from the audience, so I'm hoping that we'll get some more great questions today.
We will, I'm sure of it. Maya Braden, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Thank you very much for having us.
Well, I tell you, why is May Better Speech and Hearing Month? What's the connection, Maya?
Well, the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association has declared in, I believe it was 1927, a Better Speech and Hearing Month, and that was to draw attention to communication disorders. So across the lifespan, from children all the way up to advanced age, and to really draw attention to the way that hearing and speech and language and voice affect our communication.
It certainly does. What speech or hearing conditions most affect other areas of health and development? If you've got a problem there, are you going to have problems elsewhere?
Well, it's such a complicated organism or a whole organ to be able to communicate. You have to be able to hear well, you have to be able to learn speech and language, and then you have to be able to form and shape the words. So if you have problems with hearing, whether it's a problem with the inner ear or problems with recurrent ear infections that can impact hearing, that can impact your development of speech. And then if you have problems with the vocal tract itself, if you have hoarseness or other issues with the vocal folds, it makes it more difficult for you to be able to produce the sound. So really we approach it in both of those aspects, at least in the pediatric voice clinic at the American Family Children's Hospital.
I know for daughter Emily, she had ear infections all the time, and that affected her speech. And so she, and I'm not even remembering now which letters she was kind of mispronouncing. But we put we've got tubes in her ears finally, and she, and one visit with a speech therapist, and then she worked on it on her own. And she, I mean, she's totally able to overcome that, and now you wouldn't know that she ever had a speech issue.
Yeah, and you know, that's really one of the rewarding stories that we hear so often, that we can treat something so simply as tubes, to really help the hearing, that it impacts their speech so tremendously. Maya can probably comment to us the different sounds that people with mild hearing loss might have problems with. That can be helped with the tubes, especially in a child.
Well, yeah, and especially if children aren't hearing the sounds correctly, they're not going to have any idea how to produce them correctly. But it's, yeah, especially those consonant sounds that kids sometimes have a little bit more trouble.
Yeah, consonants. Learning. Yeah. What, you both work at the American Family Children's Hospital. What's the range of conditions that you deal with at the hospital?
Well, the clinic we work in together, we really specialize in children with voice disorders, so hoarseness, difficulty with the actual vocal tract and producing sound, as well as some breathing difficulties and cleft palate and resonance disorders. And then Dr. McMurray, you can kind of speak to some of the other.
And then as a pediatric otolaryngologist, we also include some of the hearing issues, like what happened to your daughter as well.
And is there any genetic component to this at all?
To voice issues, I don't know that we know of any real...
The answer is either yes or no. and I'm not saying that to make fun of Maya. You know, if you ask me, are there specific genetic tests that we can do that are going to predict voice orders? There are probably some specific disease processes that we can identify. Mm. But in general, no.
Okay. You want to join in? Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's talk about some of the warning signs that might definitely be a cause for concern. What should parents, caregivers be keeping an eye out for?
Well, in terms of voice disorders, if your child's voice is hoarse or it doesn't sound normal and it's beyond just a little bit of time, you know, a week or two after having a cold, then that's not normal. I think we have a lot of kids come in who their parents and people have maybe noticed the hoarseness and thought, oh, it's not really a big deal. You know, it's kind of cute, but that can really be a sign of something actually going wrong with the vocal folds, and that can be treated.
And there can be many different things that can be going on, some that could be potentially life-threatening, like warts on the vocal folds, which would progressively get larger and cause airway obstruction, which would be the more serious kinds of things that we would take care of and would need to rule out initially, to more relatively common and more benign, but also very specifically disturbing to the child, like vocal nodules, where the voice therapist is really going to be the biggest help once we can rule out some other medical problems.
Yeah. And I suppose it's hard for... Well, even with adult patients to get accurate reports about what's going on, let alone youngsters who may not even be able to verbalize what's going on with them.
You know, I'm always surprised at how well kids can verbalize what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, we found that kids as young as 3 or 4 years old are really aware of voice problems, especially in terms of that it costs them more effort to talk, or they can't do some of the things that some of their peers are doing without losing their voices. They might notice that they don't sound like other kids and that other kids or other adults have trouble understanding them. And they actually comment on that at a pretty young age.
Yeah.
And even in school years, if it's difficult to hear you, people may dismiss you or not ask you as many questions, and kids really pick up on that quickly.
Let's take a call from Mary in Madison. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I am calling because I have a daughter. She's now 12, but when she was 9 years old, she was diagnosed with bilateral tongue thrust. And she, with that, we had her frenulum snipped, and we have had some speech therapy done with her. But the problem that we have is that it's a very mild speech impediment that she has, but of course, as her parents, we noticed, and we would like to have it remedied, but she doesn't have an interest in following through with, like, her exercises for the tongue thrust. And so what I'm worried about is I've been told that when she's later in life, she could develop issues with her jaw, like TMJ. And so I'm kind of at a loss because we can only do so much as her parents, but she's the one that needs to actually want to do this, and she doesn't see it as a problem.
That is one of the challenges in working with kids, is sometimes it's not maybe as important to them as it is to their parents. And, you know, finding things that are really motivating for kids to make them want to work on different things is a big part of what we have to do. And, you know, she might need to take a little break from intensively working on it, but know that she's got to come back to it and keep working on it.
Yeah, and I'm glad Maya mentioned the break, because sometimes we do work with kids over a very prolonged period of time, and then we'll give them a break so that they can go off and do whatever they want to do, and then we'll readdress it. And sometimes they'll see the progress, the tremendous progress that they've been able to make, and then really commit to it, and it'll become more of an important part of their whole practice.
Mm-hmm. But my other question, though, is because we have done that, we've done the therapy, and we've taken a break per the recommendation of her therapist, and then we've come back, and it hasn't gotten through to her that, you know, this is important, because again, her impediment that she has is very mild, and so it's not really that her friends don't, she tells us that her friends don't notice it, so it's not really a big deal for her. But I guess my main concern is, will she have like issues with her jaw, or as she gets older, and you know,
Sure. Understood. You know what? I'll tell you what. We'll ponder that, and we will get back to that in just a couple of minutes. Our guest today, Dr. Scott McMurray, a pediatric otolaryngologist. Maya Braden is a speech-language pathologist and pediatric voice specialist, both with American Family Children's Hospital in Madison. We'll be back with them in just a couple of minutes. Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. May is Better Speech and Hearing Month. What's the connection between those two? And when are the symptoms just a normal part of childhood or something more serious? And my guests today until 12:30 are from the American Family Children's Hospital in Madison. They work with youngsters dealing with a variety of speech and hearing issues. And they have some excellent advice for parents and caregivers, whether it's hoarseness or chronic coughs or trouble swallowing. They can help you determine if your child needs to be seen. And if you have some questions, I hope you'll join us. You can reach us by calling 1-800-642-1234, or you can also email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org, and go to our Facebook page, post a comment at The Larry Mueller Show. Back with our guests right after the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. President Obama wrapped up meetings at the White House a few minutes ago with Jordan's King Abdullah.
This meeting was an opportunity for us to share our views on the extraordinary changes that are taking place throughout the Middle East, throughout the region.
The president says the two leaders discussed the situation in Libya and expressed appreciation for the support for our efforts to bring humanitarian assistance and protection there. They also discussed rapid transformation in Tunisia and Egypt and called for both political and economic reform. Pakistani intelligence agents have captured what the army is calling a senior al-Qaeda operative. As NPR's Julie McCarthy reports, the militant was found in the port city of Karachi.
The army identified the suspected al-Qaeda terrorist as Muhammad Ali Qasim with an alias Abu Suhaib al-Maki. Army spokesman General Attar Abbas said that a preliminary investigation showed him to be a Yemeni national who had been, quote, working directly under al-Qaeda leaders in Pakistan's tribal areas along the Afghan border. Several terror experts in Pakistan had not heard of al-Maki. However, a statement issued by the army said his capture was a major development in unraveling the al-Qaeda network operation in the region. An intelligence source said he'd been taken into custody some days back from an area in Karachi largely inhabited by Afghan refugees. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, Islamabad.
An arrival ceremony in Dublin for Queen Elizabeth, the first reigning British monarch to visit the Republic of Ireland since independence. The Queen and Prince Philip arrived today for a four-day visit. As Amy Gutman reports, after two bomb scares and demonstrations, security is on high alert.
In a nod to her host nation, Queen Elizabeth arrived wearing vibrant emerald green. She then changed into a softer cream-colored outfit before planting a tree at the Irish presidential residence. Protesters throwing fireworks, flares, and bottles were held back by police as the Queen lay a wreath at Dublin's Remembrance Park, honoring those who fought for Irish independence. Today marks the anniversary of Bloody Sunday. The Queen's schedule includes a history lesson and reception at Trinity College. She and Prince Philip will also tour counties Kildare and Cork over the next few days. For NPR News, I'm Amy Gutman in London.
U.S. manufacturers produced fewer goods in April, the first drop in industrial production in 10 months. The Federal Reserve says factory output fell 0.4% last month. The drop is mainly attributed to a shortage of parts from Japan that forced car makers to cut back output. Excluding auto production, manufacturing rose 0.2%. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was down 142 points at 12,405. The Nasdaq was off 17. This is NPR. Former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is admitting that he fathered a child with a member of his household staff. The child is now more than 10 years old. Schwarzenegger and his wife, Maria Shriver, announced last week they've separated after 25 years of marriage. The former governor says he told Shriver about the child after he left office earlier this year. Shriver's calling for privacy. The head of the International Monetary Fund is spending another day in jail at Rikers Island and facing mounting pressure to step down. Dominique Strauss-Kahn is remanded in custody after being arrested for attempted rape. Finance ministers in Austria and Spain are calling on him to consider the welfare of the IMF. Minnesota Twins Hall of Famer Harmon Killebrew has died after battling esophageal cancer. He was 74. As Matt Sepik of Minnesota Public Radio reports, Killebrew's nickname, The Killer, belied a humble personality.
Killebrew signed with the old Washington Senators in 1954 at age 17. After a slow start to his career, he eventually became known for monster home runs that reached the upper decks of many ballparks. Doug Groh, who wrote a history of the Twins, says when the Senators moved to Minnesota in 1961, Killebrew's quiet demeanor made him a perfect fit for the upper Midwest.
He didn't pound his chest when he did something well. He didn't pout. He didn't grumble in the clubhouse. And yet he could hit these incredible home runs.
After a contract dispute, Killebrew played his final season with Kansas City in 1975, retiring with 573 home runs, now 11th all-time. For NPR News, I'm Matt Sepik in Minneapolis.
And I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Kauffman Foundation, working to grow economies and expand human welfare. Learn more at kauffman.org.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we visit about speech and hearing issues with children. This is the month, Better Speech and Hearing Month, the month of May. And we're really glad to have Dr. Scott McMurray back. He's a pediatric otolaryngologist and also Maya Braden with us as well. Maya is a speech language pathologist and pediatric voice specialist, both with American Family Children's Hospital in Madison. Certainly, if you have questions or comments as we move along today, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And a caller who had an 11 or 12-year-old daughter with an articulation issue and wondering whether or not this she doesn't want to really work on it right now and resolve that issue, and the mother was wondering whether or not that was going to lead to problems down the road, other kinds of problems. What do you think, Dr. McMurray?
Right. No. So it was an excellent question, and you know, a great concern for parents in terms of her child. Really, if it's just the articulation problem, although we would like to have everyone have perfect diction and perfect articulation, I think that she should continue to work. And at some point, I think that child will cue in that perhaps they are better off with following some of the therapies and getting better articulation. The other question that the caller had was, is my child going to develop other medical problems because of this issue? And if she's continuing to have tongue thrust as the cause for her articulation, then yes, that's a possibility. And so I would recommend that she go back to her otolaryngologist to have another examination. If it's that she just has continued articulation, but the tongue thrust and the cause of the tongue thrust has been resolved, then I think that the other medical problems are probably not going to happen.
What is tongue thrust, by the way?
So tongue thrust is really exactly as it's described by the name. You hold your tongue in a more forward situation. And what that does is sort of limit your ability to move your tongue inside your mouth to give you the articulation and to shape the sounds that we make to make it into intelligent speech. The causes of tongue thrusts are varied, but generally it's from sort of airway obstruction, in particular nasal airway obstruction. So you keep your mouth in sort of an open position, and your body can almost remodel itself so that it's in a more comfortable position, having the mouth open and the tongue forward. So we're looking at adenoids, at tonsils, allergies, septal deviation, all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Ray in Chicago has a question for you. Hi, Ray. Thank you for calling.
How are you doing, sir? This is a great show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question. I have a 3-year-old, and he wasn't speaking. speaking well. So we found out the school by our house had a class for like 3 or 4 year olds to help him with his speaking. And it wasn't seem to be working, but we noticed when an airplane went by, I live in Chicago, we have planes fly by, or a motorcycle, he would hold his ears, and his ears would turn red. So when we took him to his doctor, she just said, oh, just a minor infection, and she gave him some antibiotics. Well, it wasn't working, so we decided to go to a new doctor. And the new doctor said his ears were very impacted with wax. She said really bad impact of wax.
Mm-hmm.
So she tried to dig it out. She got a little out, and then she had us put in the earwax remover for a month. So we went back there yesterday, and she said it's not really working. So now we got to see a specialist to dig it out. And I was wondering, what's the dangers of that, and could that be the reason why he's not speaking well?
Well, the development of speech and language really depends on you being able to hear exactly the language that you're trying to learn. And if you don't hear it well, then you're not going to develop language very well. In terms of hearing, that's one of the most important things that we do when we're assessing a new patient with speech and language delay is their hearing. And it sounds like your child easily could have some hearing problems just from the wax impaction. Wax impaction itself is not a significant issue other than its impact on hearing. But so we like to clean it out, and there are many different ways to do it. In the ENT's office, we would use a microscope and probably some little spoons or some curettes to get it out. Sometimes we're not able to get it out comfortably in a child in the office, and so then we need to do further physical exams, say in the operating room under general anesthesia. That would be unusual, but if we're not able to clear it out and see the eardrum and see the whole ear to make sure that they have good hearing health, then that would be an important next step.
Okay. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. John in Madison emailed, wonders, what are the dangers or what do you know about the dangers of headphones and iPods?
Well, we do know that people tend to have the earphones and iPods turned up to a fairly high level, and with the increased amount of people constantly having earphones in, there tends to be more high noise exposure that then can lead to some hearing loss. So one thing to be really careful of is how high is that iPod turned up?
Yeah.
And, going along with how loud it is, it's also how long you're exposed to it. And OSHA, has come out with a bunch of standards that's not only how loud it is, but how long you're exposed to it. So the more that you listen to it, the longer that you do, the greater the chance that you'll have some hearing injury. And so what I always tell my patients, my kids, I look them in the eye and I say, if mom can hear it, it's too loud.
There you go. And then is there a length of time then that...
Well, I can't give you a specific time of how long people should listen to loud music. I also tell them if your ears are ringing or if you feel like you can't hear it after you've gone to, say, a concert, it's too loud because that's your body trying to protect itself by sort of turning down the gain in your hearing.
Let's go to Nancy in Madison next. Hi, Nancy. Thank you for calling.
Yes, we have a 2-year-old grandson who's just turned two, very few words, and he uses what sounds to us like a garbled, it's like he's speaking another language. And I'm just wondering when you become concerned about the lack of growing vocabulary.
Well, definitely by 2, if he really doesn't have any words. Usually by 2, kids have at least 50 words and are putting 2 words together. So the first thing we would want to look at is, does he have normal hearing? Because if he's not having normal hearing, then he's not picking up on the right sounds. And then you would want to get a speech and language evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Terry in Platteville, on to you. Hi, Terry.
3.5-year-old.
Okay.
He uses the T sound for a K sound and a B for a G. Mm-hmm. And I know there's maybe some tricks in helping him get over that. I was wondering if you had any clues for us to help him with that.
At 3.5, it's not that unusual to have some of those substitutions of sounds, especially if you can understand a lot of what he says. My specialty really isn't articulation. It's really more voice. But I would say in terms of kind of helping him, just making sure that you're using really clear speech around him and making sure that – what you're modeling is something that he will be able to hear and pick up on.
He can say the hard K sound in the middle of a word, but can't start a word with it.
And, you know, at 3.5, okay. I would not be overly concerned then, especially if he has that sound.
Another thing that's happening is he coughs hard in the mornings without really a sinus condition. I mean, he seems to really wake up with a bad cough.
Yeah.
Is that an allergy, we were thinking?
You know, cough can come from so many different things. Cough just is sort of the body's way to protect the lungs. And if there is something dripping down the back of his throat, that would cause him to have a cough. I almost think you should go and see your local otolaryngologist so we could get his hearing tested to make sure that he's able to hear the sounds to help him with his articulation, and then just sort of have a general physical of the head and neck to see if there might be a cause for the cough.
Mm-hmm. There you
That's
go.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Linda and Racine, it's your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I had one small comment and then a question. The comment was about the headphones. When I take my grandchildren to the library, before I let them work on the computers, I always check the volume on the headphones. They always seem to be way too loud. So just a reminder for folks to, you know, think about that. The question I had, though, was about my grandson who's 4. He has cerebral palsy. He makes a few noises. He makes no words. He has almost total control of all of his muscles. Is there any potential for him to be able to speak someday?
That's a really hard question to answer because it's so individual. You know, it's really hard to say what his abilities are going to develop into. I would want to make sure that he's getting getting therapy of some kind, speech therapy of some kind, to help him develop whatever communication is going to be the best for him to develop. And that might be, you know, a combination of some speech and some other ways of communicating, such as alternative and augmentative communication. But again, without meeting him, doing a full evaluation, it'd be...
But you're saying it is possible for some children with cerebral palsy to have some level of speech. You are saying that.
Yeah, I mean, cerebral palsy is such a wide range of abilities and difficulties.
All right.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Todd in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Todd.
Hi. I have a son. He's now 18, but at a very early age, we discovered that he was profoundly deaf in one ear, and went through some testing, and there wasn't conduction or nerve conduction. Apparently, he wasn't a candidate for a cochlear implant. But what we've noticed with his growth and development is that he speaks out to the side that he hears on. And, you know, he's kind of doesn't have the sensitivity on the bad ear side to, obviously, you know, sounds that we become, you know, accustomed to. And I was wondering, is there a way to help him, are there any devices to help him identify sound through the good ear that's coming from the opposite side?
Yeah, there are many sort of different techniques that he could do. One would be... to help remind him to sort of turn his head so that he can hear in all different directions. There are some other devices that some other otolaryngologists would use, like a bone-anchored hearing aid. So you can put in a hearing aid on the bad side that sort of transmits the sound through the skull, and then it would go into the other ear. And that would sort of open up the shadow, if you would, so to speak, of sort of the blind spot that he has on the other side. So there are some things there. You know, there's always risk involved with all the different things that you do. And so the benefit may not outweigh the risk with some of these procedures, but there are some other things that can be done.
Mm-hmm. And how would one weigh those risks and benefits? Where would you get information to find out more about that?
Yeah, I would speak with an otolaryngologist that does it. You know, Maya said, I don't do articulation so much, and I actually don't do the Baha implants, although I do have partners that do, and I know that there are some in Milwaukee. I think you said you're calling from Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's
correct. I would go to the Children's Hospital over there in Milwaukee and speak to them.
Okay.
Can I ask another question?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm an orthodontist, and so I see some sequelae to these tongue thrust issues. And just not a question, but maybe more of a comment, that we have a lot of difficulty resolving orthodontic problems unless the underlying muscles problem has been addressed satisfactorily, a persistent tongue thrust will limit very much what we've tried to do orthodontically as far as corrections for these open bites.
Hmm. Absolutely, and we get a lot of referrals from orthodontists about open bite problems and trying to resolve any airway obstruction, especially through the nose. And, you know, I would encourage you to contact the otolaryngologist in your neighborhood that you refer to just to get a personal relationship with them and remind them. It's not that we don't know about it or forget, but oftentimes we don't know really the troubles that other specialists are having. And I think it really helps open their eyes so that we can all work together to help these kids out.
Yep. Yeah, I don't like to be the one that sends them for the tonsil adenoidectomies specifically, but I'd like to cast a vote
sure.
if possible.
Yeah.
But very much for the very informative program.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. It was always assumed that tonsils, you know, when I was a kid, everybody had their tonsils out, except my parents said, no, we're not going to have your tonsils out unless there's a problem. It doesn't seem to be the case anymore that people are automatically removing tonsils. What caused that switch?
Well, you know, like you said, everybody and their dog had their tonsils out. And then if you have brothers or sisters that still had theirs in, oftentimes the surgeon would say, well, you know, we ought to get rid of all of them, just bring them in and we'll just do them in a line. And, you know, the risks that are involved with tonsillectomy, the most common would be dehydration, which we can help take care of by getting the child either to drink or give them some fluid by vein. But probably the biggest is bleeding. And, you know, it happens in about 1 in 100. And you know, I do about 250 to 300 tonsils a year. And as a group, we do about 800. And so, you know, that complication can arise. And so if we don't have good indications for the procedure, then really the procedure shouldn't be done. So I think that's why it's the shift. I get other parents that come in and say, oh, you know, I know you don't do tonsils anymore, but, you know, could you please look at it? And I laugh because tonsillectomy is still the most common procedure that I do.
Is that right?
Right. However, we try to do it when it's appropriate.
All right. Dave in Kalamazoo, Michigan, on to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hello. I've got a 7-year-old granddaughter that's autistic. She's been in school since she's a year old. She does speak, but she has this flat tone speak like a deaf person is about what it sounds like. And she is very adverse to loud noises. I mean, she covers her head up. We actually use electronic earmuffs like a shooter would use for around parades or things like that in order to get her to be able to watch them. Otherwise, she's covered her head.
Yeah.
Just kind of wondered if there was something with a hearing that would affect her speech. She'll sing songs and stuff like that, but it's that flat toned like a deaf person has.
Yeah, you know, the range of hearing of the human ear is amazing. You know, it spans at least a piano. And it may be that she's missing parts of it, or that, you know, overall she's not deaf, obviously, but maybe that she has some problems with hearing that's changing how she sounds to herself when she's trying to speak, which makes it sound different to other people.
Mm.
So I would encourage you, if she hasn't had her hearing tested, to have her hearing tested.
I believe she has, and I just was kind of wondering if there was anything we could work with her. You know, like I said, she does sing. She knows all that Wheels on the Bus song. She sings that.
It's a great song.
But it's just that flat tone to her voice.
Yeah, and so if her hearing has been tested and that's normal, you know, it does sound like she may be a little hypersensitive to sounds if she covers her ears. You know, that flat tone, the variation of tone in speech is something we call prosody, which is another part of speech. And if she's able to vary her pitch by singing, that tells us that she's able to do it. She may not be making the connection exactly with, you know, how people speak and alter their tone typically when they're speaking. And that's something that she could be working with her speech pathologist on, you know, in addition to any other speech and language goals that she has that might help. But I think as long as the hearing has been addressed and you know that the voice can alter its pitch, then it's probably not anything physiological that's happening.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And Angela in New Holstein, we go to you now. Hi, Angela.
Hi. I have a question regarding my daughter and her speech. She's been in speech therapy for about 3 years. She is diagnosed with a tongue thrust, and she is in orthodontic treatment to close up her bite and to help improve that. The problem is, when she was younger, she did have the ear infections. She did, you know, we're through those now. She did have hearing tests when she was younger, and there was hearing loss, but she was still within the normal range. But we just, with the 3 years of speech therapy, there just seems to be no improvement on her R. And I'm wondering, we did live in a foreign country for a few years while she was developing speech, and she learned everything kind of phonetically. And I'm wondering if that is creating the issue, or if it's more of the speech impediment itself that she just still has to work through.
Well, I think, yeah, R can be a hard one to work on. It tends to be one of those later developing sounds. You know, if you were speaking English to her, she was getting that input in English, and so she should have been getting those sounds. And it may just be something that she needs to continue working on in speech therapy.
So she just needs to keep at it.
How old did you say she is?
She's 9.
She's 9. Yeah, I would say, you know, again, not to keep coming back to the same point, we want to make sure that the hearing is normal. So make sure that her hearing has been tested. I don't know that necessarily living in a foreign country would, I know that it wouldn't make it so that she can't say her R's. It might have changed the kind of input that she's getting, but if she's getting the, you know, American accent from you, then then that's
And R's are hard. R's come much later, right? R's
are R's wouldn't are very be hard. Unusual to not have it at, you know, 6 years old.
Mm-hmm. All right. There we go. Thank you very much for calling. Jean in Madison says her 2-year-old son has chronic coughing, wheezing, nasal congestion, ear infection since he was 3 months old. He recently had tubes put in, actually, at American Family. Within 2 days after the surgery, he started coughing, wheezing, and had nasal congestion as usual, plus double ear infections a week later. It's been 3 weeks, still suffering from those symptoms. Also has speech troubles from the ear infection, causing hearing loss prior to surgery. What should we do for him now? What's the next step for us to treat him for these symptoms? Plus, should we get him to a speech therapist at his age, 2 years?
So a couple different things. One is, you know, although I think tubes are fantastic and they really do help alleviate, obviously, the hearing problems with fluid behind the ear, they really are just setting up the kid to be able to take care of the own ear infections that they may get. So whereas there won't be fluid trapped behind the eardrum that can get infected repeatedly, they can still catch a cold and they can still get an ear infection, even with tubes in. So although this was kind of a cold, snowy winter, and although we had that real warm spell, we're back into having kind of a cold snap, there still are a lot of really bad spring colds that are going around. And so that may be the case. However, if he's starting to have issues again like that and having some breathing problems, then I would take him back to the primary care and or the otolaryngologist to have a look at. And it may be that we would need to step up. All the things that we do, we're trying to help the kid be able to take care of themselves. And sometimes we need to move on to the next step, such as maybe removing their adenoids.
Hmm.
And in terms of when they should go to a speech and language pathologist for a language eval, how about you, Maya?
Yeah, well, it really depends on what is going on with the speech and language. I think 2 years old is certainly not too young to begin therapy for some things, but they would need to have an evaluation to see if what they're doing is really age appropriate or not. And so setting them up with a speech pathologist for an evaluation, 2 is not too early.
Yeah, and I'm always encouraging people to go in for an evaluation. That way we can get a point on the map and watch their development. Or we can see how he does it now that he's had the tubes placed. And if he has rapid improvement, then we can think, well, things are going to be good. So it could really go either way.
Excellent. And just in the last 30 seconds, a grandson of 3.5, very hoarse voice. The cousin has the same voice. The grandson occasionally puts his tongue out to help him swallow. Are these, the hoarseness and the tongue out to swallow, are they related at all?
Well, they could be, and that's one case where I would really bring them into an otolaryngologist and a speech pathologist to have a complete evaluation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he needs that. And I tell you what, we are out of time. I want to thank you both so much for being with us. Is there a website, any place people can go?
Well, the University of Wisconsin UW Health website has a link to our clinics.
Yeah, uwhealth.org.
uwhealth.org.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Thank you both for being with us today. We'll have them back. We'll do it again. Dr. Scott McMurray and Maya Braden, who both work at American Family Children's Hospital in Madison. Dr. McMurray is a pediatric otolaryngologist. Maya Braden, speech-language pathologist and pediatric voice specialist. And thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
In the last 20 years, noir has gone global, with Swedish fiction writer Stieg Larsson copping the number two place in the U.S., and crime fiction showing up in countries like Algeria, Turkey, India, and Ireland. I'm Jean Faraca. Join us on The Next Here on Earth. Today at 3 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from American Players Theater, presenting five plays in the outdoor amphitheater Up the Hill and three productions in the indoor Touchstone Theater, June 4th through October 16th.